So it boils down to, a gift from God is contentment. That's yours. So now what are you going to go do with it? Well, you might think, I would love for that to be true. Well, then the question is, well, with all the blessings that God has provided you with, why are you not content? It all boils down to our relationship with wealth, with blessing. On one hand, we have seen that it can be good to be blessed if we understand the blessing, but it can become a curse when we don't. So we start out with this question. Do you have what you want? Well, you might have a list. And maybe what you need to do is go through that list sometime when you're at home and quiet. It says, what is it that I have? Because maybe I need to do an inventory, because potentially I might be richer in life than I actually believe I am. Wouldn't that be a grievous evil, as the teacher would say in Ecclesiastes? To be richly blessed and think that you're not. Do you want what you have? Another question that maybe we need to spend some time is, first, we have to understand what we have and then decide if what we have is what we want. We talked in class earlier through this passage when we realized that our perspective on life, of what blessing is or is not, is usually seen in hindsight. We might think we know what we want and what will satisfy us, but it's after we possess this thing, spend the time trying to achieve and grasp and hold on to this thing, that we look back and go, that was a nice thing, but it wasn't the ultimate thing. Perfect. But that can be a grievous evil, as the teacher of Ecclesiastes can say, because if I'm pursuing all these things that are ultimately going to satisfy but do not ultimately satisfy, why am I spending so much time focused on those things? And then you boil it down to how you come into the world and how you leave. Bookends to what the life in the middle should look like. So if you come into the world with nothing and you leave the world with nothing, then what are you going to do with all the time you have between those bookends? What do you want to have a wealth of? Oftentimes we think of wealth as just merely financial. But it can be more than that. Would you know if the means that you seek to obtain this wealth will actually hinder gaining it? That's a challenge, isn't it? That we can think in our mind, this is what I want my life to look like, this is what is going to bring ultimate satisfaction, and then we start pursuing something, thinking it's going to reach that end, but then instead of it bringing us what we long for, it keeps us from achieving what we hope for. Oh, another grievous evil on this earth. Because I see so many people pursuing things that they think will ultimately satisfy or even elevate them to a place in status. That they think that a wealth of status is going to make me feel valuable. Which indicates something, doesn't it? That who are you before you have status? If status brings you value, you are valueless. So then you think, well, if status is everything, because that's what the world tells me, that if I have stuff and more stuff, I'm more valuable to other people in the world, and then therefore I will be valuable to them, and then I will finally feel valuable to me. a chasing after the wind. Because all that time, all that pursuit, what are you going to take away with you when the journey is over? So we have to understand the world. We have to understand the way it works. We can assume the way the world works and what's going to bring the good life. I think we've all probably spent a lot of time thinking about that. Because how you think about what brings value in the world says a lot about what you do with the blessing God gives you, whether it's the blessing of talents, whether it's the blessing of physical wealth, whether it's the blessing of time, whether it's the blessing of status. All those choices that we make with all those things indicate the way we view the world and ultimately the way we view God. And God is standing outside of it trying to cry out to us, telling us like he did to Adam and Eve. He told them before it even got rolling in this meaningless life, you do these things, you will find meaning and purpose in your life. Because you will know you're valued. You won't need anything else to support that. They didn't trust it. So how does the world actually work? I heard this illustration. I thought it was pretty humorous. There's a ship that a Navy ship calls out to another ship. This is a Navy vessel. You need to turn 15 degrees to the north to avoid a collision. And the voice on the radio responds, you need to divert yourself 15 degrees to the south to avert a collision. The first voice calls back, this is the U.S. Navy. Divert your course, or there's going to be a collision. Divert your course, comes back over the radio, or there's going to be a collision. We are a large ship. This is an aircraft carrier, the USS Enterprise. Divert your course. This is a lighthouse. You choose. Pretty humorous, right? But what it talks about is perception. That we think by human exertion, human power, that we're going to be able to reshape the reality the way we want it to be, as opposed to getting a map and saying, what is the lay of the land? How does it work? What's going on here? So that I can traverse the valleys and the hills of life more easily and not believe that it's going to be just an easy road, because there's going to be hills, there's going to be valleys, there's going to be deserts, there's going to be abundance of water. But what are you going to do when you reach those places if you don't realize those places exist? How can you prepare for that? And God gives us his word so that we can prepare to go through this life in a way that's going to bring value, worth, blessing, and peace. But when we think we know better than God, what often happens? We are deficit in blessing, in peace, in contentment, in understanding, in acceptance of the way the world works. There are some things in the world that happen that need to be changed. Believe me, I'm not just saying that, oh, well, you know, fold the hands like the teacher says. Don't fold your hands. There are things that are evil in our world that we as people of God, with light of God, go out into the world and say, this is wrong, that we have to stand up for those things. But we also know that there are people who are going to resist that and not like it, because we're getting in the way of their kingdom building. Because they're trying to accumulate wealth and power, and by diverting wealth and power to other people, they lose wealth and power. And if it's all about building my kingdom, it's all about accomplishing what I think is most important. Some quotes about wealth. Will Rogers says, too many people spend money they earn to buy things that they don't want to impress people that they don't like. What's the point?
I'll put them in their place.
Really? So you're going to spend all that time, all that effort on something that is turning you inside out rather than saying, their problem. I'm going to live within the blessing. Epictetus says, wealth consists not of having great possessions, but in having few wants. Oh, isn't that what's driving the accumulation of wealth as we define it? The chasing after these things, that if I have more of these things, the more content I will be. And then we pile them up around us, and then we have to fortify a wall around us so that people don't take what we've accumulated. And that's part of the things that we're going to see in these. There's four scenarios that we're going to look at. Emerson says, money often costs too much. Too much what? Too much time? Too much energy? Too much anxiety? Too much depression? But we think that it's the wealth that's going to take away the anxiety, take away the depression. And we'll see that in some of the scenarios too. Seneca says, it is not the man who has too little, but the man who craves more that is poor. Are you getting a theme here? That it's how we look at the material things in this life that are either going to allow us to feel blessed and content or cause us to be anxious and striving. Christopher Rice says, every day is a bank account. The time is our currency. No one is rich. No one is poor. We've all got 24 hours. So how do you define your worth, your wealth? In Ecclesiastes, this is, I love this interpretation. It says, the more loot we get, the more the looters show up. Is how Eugene Peterson translates it in the Message translation of Ecclesiastes 5:11. And the person who is hoarding wealth and thinking that that's going to satisfy, what good is it that all they can do is wonder and worry and not be able to rest? Because someone's going to come and take it. If any of you have seen the movies or read the book The Hobbit, will understand that Thorin Oakenshield, who is the king under the mountain, who had his family had all this gold, all this riches. His father had it, his grandfather had it. It's called dragon sickness. Tolkien describes this idea that it's the money, it's the possession of these things, that there is never enough. So what you have to do is fortify your mountain, fortify your wealth, so that no one can get it from you. And there's a human that comes, his name is Bard, who says, we've done our part in sharing in the work of this community, and we're in need, and you have an answer to that need. What are you going to do? Go away. Well, you promised that you would share and help us. Go away. Why would he need so much? Because always more is better. Ebenezer Scrooge falls under the second category of someone who hoards wealth only to their harm. Can you imagine that all he did is sit and count his money, loan his money, get interest off his money? Not necessarily a bad thing. But what did it do to him? I mean, just look at the face. I love the movie with Alistair Sim. He leaves work and he goes to a little inn for something to eat. And he's got some meat and he's got some bread. And he says, where? More bread. He says, sir, that will cost you. No more bread. The next thing we find is he's at his home in a fire that is just barely lit, just holding a bowl of soup, right? And I mean, the lifestyle compared to the wealth, it was as if he was poor and not able to enjoy it. And the teacher of Ecclesiastes says, what a sick evil that is. For someone to be so blessed and not even see it. And we have to ask ourselves, in what ways have we been so blessed that we can't even accept it? Ecclesiastes 5:17 says, these people, they eat in darkness, in great frustration, in affliction and anger. Why? You're so blessed. Well, I've got wealth, but people are only going to come and take it. It's a grievous evil, the teacher says. We're told in Deuteronomy, God says, I'm going to bring you people to a land of promise. A land that you didn't, by any of your power, take. I'm going to go before you and I'm going to move these people out. And you're going to be able to live in homes you did not build. You're going to be able to eat from fields you did not plant. And he says, remember the Lord your God, for he is the one who gives you the ability to produce wealth. And so confirms his covenant, which he swore to your ancestors as it is today. So all the things that you are blessed with originate where? From God. Your abilities, your talents, your strengths. All these things that allow you to produce bounty in this world, blessing in this world, is because he has blessed you with these things. And we think we're self-made. Oh, really? Well, ask yourself the question, who made you? Well, you'd have to go talk to my parents. They made me. I had no say in it. So in what way am I a self-made person? Well, it's because our culture says you're nothing until you've made something of yourself. Well, who defines that wealth of self? God does, because you're stamped with his image. So why run after all these things that we think this is going to make me matter? But what we do, we have to turn the tables on that. But unfortunately, the Israelites didn't do that. They turned their back on God, and he's told them, even when they were leaving Egypt in the Mount Sinai, he says, I know your hearts, and it breaks my heart to say to you these things, but the time's coming, because you turned your back on me, the prophet Micah says, you will eat, but you won't be satisfied. Your stomach will still be empty. You will store up, but you will save nothing. Because what you save, I will give to the sword. He says, I've given you abundance and blessing, and you've squandered it. You think you've accomplished all these things. And you're not even content with what you've accomplished in your own mind. He says, you will plant, but you will not harvest. You will press olives, but you will not use the oil. You will crush grapes, but you will not drink its wine. Isn't that sad? And it's all because God is trying to teach humanity where the blessing comes from. And when we think it comes from us, God will say, okay, I'll take it back. Go ahead and try and produce wealth. Another evil, Ecclesiastes says, God blesses with wealth. A person accomplishes honor, but they can't enjoy it. Jesus tells a story. There's a man who yielded a great abundance. He was blessed by God. And in the world of the Bible, if you have wealth, they believe God has given it to you. And people will look up to you and honor you because you must be a godly person because of this. But we know that's not the way the world always works, right? Because at the beginning of chapter 5, what he says, if you see oppression of the poor by those who are in power, why does that surprise you? Because there are people who are seeking power over others, who want to subject them to poverty as they gorge themselves on their wealth. But he says, don't be surprised with that. Because that's the way the world works when all we want is to consume for self. And this man, he says, this great abundance, he says, what will I do with all these crops of mine? I'll share them with people because I have no place to store them. That's not what he does. He does the human thing, right? He doesn't say, I'm going to be happy with what I have and look at what abundance I have and share that with people who I know are in hard time. And, you know, we understand that the Proverbs and Ecclesiastes always also tell us that a person who just folds their hands and does nothing, the one who does not work, will not eat. But there are times when people get in situations where they're striving to have a better life and life just dumps on them. We understand that happens too. And we understand that Jesus sees us in that spiritual sense and he comes down from heaven to give us aid. So there's times when there are going to be people who are in real need, not just want. It's not just they want your stuff because they don't want to do stuff. That's an evil in the world, isn't it? I want you to do the work so that I can reap the benefit. And God says, no, you need to do some stuff too. But there are people who can't. And we have to understand that too. It's never totally one or the other. There's always shades of gray in that. But here this man, what he does, he's going to tear down his barns and build bigger barns. There I'll store my surplus. And I'll say to myself, you have plenty of grain laid up for many years. Take life easy, eat, drink, and be merry. The teacher in Ecclesiastes says, yeah, good luck trying. Because if all it is about the pursuit of wealth and your comfort and thinking, what a big man I am, then you're going to be worried about, are the mice getting in the barns? Is there mold growing? Am I losing it? And the fear of that keeps them from sleeping. But he's told something much different. Tonight, your life will be called back. Your life will be required of you. How miserable! No, just when everything was good. When I had all my ducks in a row. Oh, there were more ducks than I realized. And the ducks that I had all lined up won't matter now. And it won't matter to where I'm going. What a miserable pursuit to spend all your life accumulating things when those things are not going to go anywhere with you when you die. Jesus tells his disciple, whoever wants to be my disciples must deny himself, take up their cross, and follow me. Whoever wants to save his life must lose it. But whoever loses his life for me will find their life. You see the change of perspective, aligning with reality? What good will it be for someone to gain the world yet forfeit their soul? Or what can anyone give in exchange for their soul? For the Son of Man is going to come in his Father's glory with his angels, and then he will reward each person according to what they have done. Isn't this interesting? That all the reward that we can accumulate, we can't take with us in this scenario. Ultimately, God's going to come back and he's going to say, okay, now I'm going to bless you again. Eternally bless you again. And as we came into the world with nothing in our hands, we go into the next with nothing in our hands. And anything that God puts in our hands is a blessing from him, and we need to understand and appreciate that and glory him because of that blessing, however large or small it is. Jesus also says, truly I tell you that it's hard for someone who is rich to enter the kingdom of heaven. Again, I tell you, it's easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for someone who's rich to enter the kingdom of God. When the disciples heard this, they were greatly astonished because their minds thinking, but wealth means God's blessing you. And Jesus says, not necessarily. That could be your idol that you're putting before God. And they say, then who can be saved if the wealthy can't be saved? Can't they buy their way in? No, because they have no pockets to go into eternity with, nor any money in their hand. You can't buy your way into the house of God. Jesus looked at them and said, with men, this is impossible. But with God, all things are possible. Praise God. Praise God that he sees all and it says, I align myself with him. He's going to make a way for me to understand my abilities, my skills, my talents. He's going to bless me with great types of wealth. And how I use them as a person in his kingdom is going to be to reflect him through this abundance of wealth. Not just for my sake, but it will be, because my mind's going to be transformed that as I do these things for God, he's going to be glorified and he will glorify me now and in the future. So I can die to my pursuits. Embrace my strengths, embrace my knowledge, embrace my gifts. And let that be a means through which God is glorified. Not the thing I'm pursuing to feel good about myself. There is great wealth in money. We pursue these things. It could be a wealth of status. It could be a wealth of freedom. I get to call my time. It could be health. All these things in this world have value. But what value do they have when you're no longer in this life? And if that is true, we reevaluate what I pursue and why. In Jesus' life, he saw our need. He did something that I doubt any of us would do, is go from glory into this. Concerning money, Jesus says, I have no place to lay my head. People cared for him. Women traveled with him. And through their work and their labors, they supported his ministry. Status. Under the sun, in this world, Jesus dies as a criminal, tortured on a cross, a piece of wood that the Old Testament tells us that anyone who is hung on a tree is accursed of God. So from a worldly perspective, he's not the son of glory, he's the son of Satan. And in his life, his health is drained from him. And when his mortal body has nothing left to offer, because he's offered himself fully to satisfy our need, create a great asset for us at his cost, the Father says, taking that thing that is dead, he breathes life into it so that we can pursue life rather than wealth. Pursue contentment rather than money. And status, and freedom, and control. Jesus says, don't store up for yourself treasure on earth, where moth and vermin destroy and where thieves break in and steal, but store up for yourself treasure in heaven where moths and vermin do not destroy and where thieves do not break in and steal. For where your treasure is, so will be your heart. So will be the expenditure of your time. So will be the expenditure of your emotions, depression and anxiety. No one could steal or destroy what was valuable to Jesus. So if you're storing things up for heaven, no one can steal or destroy what will be precious to you either. So what about your valuables? What is valuable to you? Your wealth is to be a means, not an end. What needs to change is for this to be true about you. So with all your skills, all your gifts, and all of your abilities, as you have been richly blessed, as Jesus has come down to this earth with great wealth of being, emptied himself fully of the glory that he had to be a glory to us. And when we can share that mindset, the things of this world, they have their place, but they don't take their place above the God who sent his son to die for me. And when I trust that he will provide what I need when I need it, then I use my abilities and skills to be a means through which he is glorified, to be a means through which I get blessed to be able to get food and have a house and maybe to share a little bit with other people. Because when God created the garden, he set humanity in there to share it with us. And what he creates, he wants to be shared, not to be hoarded. He does not keep it to himself, but he shares it with us. So let us have like-mindedness, that this wealth, it can be a double-edged sword. Let it be a thing that can be used to help people who are sick and dying in a variety of ways, but also knowing God is going to provide for me whatever I need. Because he loves me and has sent his son to die for me. What more do you really need? What more do you really need to pursue to have peace, hope, and contentment? If you have the needs, we're here to help. Whatever it takes to help you reflect Christ into a world who needs Christ so badly. Let's stand and give God praise.